Welcome into another Teal Town Conversation. If you're new here, you're listening for the first time, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, YouTube, and pretty much everywhere else. Check out tealtownusa.com for all our content, the one-stop shop for all that good stuff. I am Chris. You can find me on Twitter at ChrisJWS. Also follow Teal Town USA on Twitter as well. I'll get to my co-hosts in a moment, but first I want to introduce the topic of the day and our guest. So the Vegas Golden Knights will be hosting the Sharks for Game 1 on Thursday. It broke about a minute or two before we got on air here. It'll be the first ever matchup between these two in the first season the Golden Knights have ever had. Our guest today is Chris Liza. Correct me if I mispronounce that. From the Vegas Hockey Podcast. You can find them on iTunes and more. You can also check out their Twitter at Vegas Hockey Pod. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, Chris. Great to be here.
So I know you also have a number of other things you do. You're located on the East Coast. I know you said before we got on air here that you're a big Islanders fan. I know you do some work with that. So if you want to plug some of the other stuff you do there at the top here, and we'll also make sure to put the links in the description as well.
Well, I appreciate that. This way you don't have a bunch of people chasing after me. So I write for the fan-sided site eyesonisles.com. So kind of, I like to think Cold It Down the Middle with the New York Islanders. And for the playoffs only, I'm doing a second podcast with Alan Zlotozinski, which you can find him at Zlot Sports, the one and only Alan. The NHL on the Ice podcast, and that runs the NHL on the Ice podcast. We're gonna, I think, find a home for Thursdays at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, and the Vegas Hockey podcast are 99% of the time on Saturdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. West Coast Pacific time. So actually, this Saturday we're having Dan Harrigan on to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning and whoever they're going to be playing in the first round of the playoffs. So a lot of good stuff going on.
Awesome. And you shared this with us before we got on air, but you live on the East Coast. How did you end up podcasting about the Vegas Knights?
Well, long story short, in the very early stages of the Vegas Hockey podcast, I came on as a guest, and we connected really well, me and Mark Warner, my co-host, and then his co-host at the time got out of kind of the podcast thing, and me and him said, well, let's give it a try. And I think we're on year three or year four. I can't even remember anymore, but it's going well. And you can find our show, like you said, it's all over. It's on Blog Talk Radio. It's on iTunes. We're on Russ Cohen's SoundCloud page. Russ is a great follow as well. If I can plug to him at Sportsology. If you want to know anything about the draft or the prospects, you got to check out Russ Cohen's stuff. So, yeah, it's been a really great show to be involved with. We usually do a quarter of the show on the Vegas Golden Knights. Then we have a guest from somebody around the league, like we had, although we didn't have him this year, but 2 years ago we had Mr. Ian Reed, who did a very bang up job. I don't know why we didn't have him.
That guy is the worst.
Yeah. I think what happens is we love Zach Devine. So we've had Zach on many times. So, you know, Zach's also a Sharks guy. So that's probably why, but yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, Mr. Zach the Bear, as he's known around here, him very well. He's a good friend of the show here. I also have, this is awkward. I just looked at the sheet here. I have Ian Reed is also on with us.
Hey, good to be here. Yeah, nice to catch up again, Chris. It's been a while.
Yes.
I don't blame you for having, if I had to choose between me or Zach, I'd choose Zach too. Full disclosure.
And I totally didn't mean those bad things I said about you, Ian. I'm sorry.
That's fair.
And we also have, I think he's been knighted, so we will call him Sir Jerk
on his line. Yeah, you see, what you've got to pick up on by this point is the titles, the names, the vernacular. It changes almost on the daily, so by the time this pod is posted, I may be going by a different name altogether. There's no way to know for sure.
Well, for Cinco de Mayo, you're going to be like Senor Jerk, right?
That's definitely in the works. Got to move things around. My agent and my other people, we've been talking extensively, but we're going to have some cool little plan for that day.
Well, that's excellent. That's good. It's good to know. So let's jump into it. I think the first thing we want to talk about a little bit is, especially given that the Knights are so new to everybody, talk a little bit about who these guys are, because even if you follow a fair amount of hockey, like, it's still kind of just a little bit new to everyone because, you know, every other team we play, like, we've seen them for years. We know all the top line guys. We know all the pests on the bottom line. You know, there's a long history there. But Vegas is kind of a bit of an enigma as the first year and they won the division. So I'll just start with this, a popular talking point, and I think it's fairly accurate. The secret sauce for Vegas this season is they aren't a 1-4 line kind of team. They're a couple of 2/3 lines. Do you agree with that assessment, Chris? Do you think that's a fair way of putting it, or do you have a different way of expressing what has made Vegas so successful?
Well, yeah, I think a big key is their depth this year for certain. Although I would say that William Karlsson in production gave, you know, first line production to say the least. And then they had a number of guys give, you know, second line plus, if you will, production as well. But the amazing thing to me about Vegas was, you know, and trying to, I mean, this is not your uncle's expansion team or expansion franchise. So, you know, comparing this to any other franchise is kind of ridiculous. But having said that, I mean, I think a good way to look at this, when I thought of their biggest problem going into the year, or their biggest, one of their biggest obstacles is, you know, at the trade deadline, they picked up Thomas Tatar. And, you know, he's had a hard time kind of fitting in with, you know, new city, new line mates, new coaching staff. And, you know, that's not an uncommon tale. So before the season started, I was saying to myself, you know, I've seen situations where new players come to a team and they could be very established and there's an adjustment period. I go, here is a case where you have a whole team adjusting. So from the standpoint of the city, like I said, the coaching staff and other than probably Riley Smith was probably the only one who played under Gerard Gallant. Jonathan Marchessault, I think, played a handful of games under him, and none of these players played with one another. So that, to me, I thought the first third to half of the year, it was going to be a challenge getting their feet on the ground. And by that point, you know, maybe they'd be a competitive under 500 team in the NHL, and then they would be building for the future. So, you know, they've really been on a magic carpet ride the whole year, which has really been pretty amazing. They've hardly had any bumps in the road, and the key has been their depth. They have a good blend of, you know, proven players like Riley Smith and James Neal and David Perron and Cody Eakin, as well as, you know, William Karlsson, who was a really good young player as a support player, go from a support player for the Columbus Blue Jackets to a 40-goal scorer. I mean, Jonathan Marchessault backed up last year. Eric Holland, Alex Tuch trade is probably why Cliff Fletcher is no longer the Minnesota Wild GM. And then, you know, being able to build the defense around youngster Shea Theodore, Nate Schmidt, and then having a Marc-Andre Fleury in goal. So you put all those pieces in the stew, and it has wound up being a team that won the Pacific Division and beat a tough LA Kings team in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, hearing all that you're saying, it's like you're reading right off the notes in front of me here, because you mentioned pretty much every name on my little notepad here. Ian Reed, did Vegas surprise you this year, or did you think they would be this competitive?
No, I mean, they definitely surprised me. I think as the season went on, I was very much, you know, like when the season started, I mean, when I did the Pacific Division predictions when I was working on Puck Pros, I think I had Vegas fighting with Vancouver for bottom of the Pacific. I also had Canadian teams doing very well that didn't. So maybe take that with a grain of salt. But I think as the season went on, where a lot of people were like, okay, this is when they're going to fall off, I never really bought into that. Like the longer the season went, the more I felt that this team, you know, this team was for real. It was legit. And it still scares me now a little bit going into this next round, even though I think the teams match up decently well.
Sir Jerk, you saw them in person. Did they surprise you this year?
You know, they did surprise me. I think everybody expected them to start out, maybe they would get a couple wins, but then eventually, you know, like Ian said, they would slip and kind of be fighting with Vancouver, you know, when you consider the, for lack of a better term, spare parts that they were operating with. But then, you know, around Thanksgiving, when they had already strung together a handful of wins, it kind of created the mindset of like, okay, maybe they might actually be something interesting. I mean, there was a while where it seemed like they could never lose, you know, and then there was the game specifically that I saw, there was a lot of, I used this previously, it's the surprise factor where, you know, you're everything appears to be just going through the motions, and then all of a sudden Vegas is on you and it's an on-man rush and they're going to score. And I think that's where the Golden Knights have made a lot of their money, is, you know, where they capitalize on opportunities that may not be present to the team they're facing. And I think ultimately that's what's helped them in the standings, is that they've taken advantage of the most microscopic opportunities, and it's allowed them to ascend to the top of the standings.
So, Chris, there's someone you mentioned at the beginning there, Carlson, who I was like, how was this guy not on my radar before this year, really? And I looked back, and he had 15 total goals in the last two seasons with Columbus, and then he had 43 goals this year. I mean, do you have any take on how that happened exactly? What happened there?
Well, he was a guy that last year around this time, when we were trying to project teams, what players at Vegas, Columbus was one of the teams that you knew that they were going to have a good player because they had a deep roster and they yeah. couldn't keep them all. And he was a guy who was kind of tracking, and he's a young player. He could play, you know, wing or center, so that's always a good thing. He's a smooth skater. He's a good penalty killer. And I think last year, I want to say he had around 10 goals or so. Maybe it might have been 8 or 9. And I thought to myself, you know what? He's got a support role in Columbus, but if he went to Vegas with more playing time, maybe he could be that great third-line center or a third-line winger, give you 15 goals in terms of support, give you, as they like to say, a 200-foot game, be a good penalty killer, and at the end of the day, be a really nice player. I don't think anyone short of Zach the Bear saw this coming in terms of this offensive production. And ironically, he's a restricted free agent. Not that means he's going anywhere, but Vegas will have an interesting call on how they'll attack trying to sign him this offseason, if it's a bridge deal or if they try to lock him up off this year.
Well, I mean, that's a good problem to have, because I was just looking at that, like, how did that happen? And he's a guy we're going to talk about at least a few more times here, because that's probably, in my opinion, one of the number one names when it comes to key matchups. Another guy, Marc-Andre Fleury, you had mentioned, he had a 927 save percentage this season, a 977 in the four playoff games against the Kings. Guy whose career had, I think, somewhere around 91%. So he's had a very good year overall and a really, really good playoffs overall. Do you think he's been supported better in Vegas? He's playing better in Vegas? A little of each, or what's your take there?
So Fleury had a real renaissance year with Pittsburgh last year. And so it's not a surprise. The big thing with him is he's had a bit of the concussion history, and he had another one this year, so that's a little bit nerve-wracking. But other than that, as long as he's healthy, he's a top flight goalie. You're talking about a guy who's won multiple Stanley Cups, and let's face it, you know, last year Pittsburgh had an unusual tandem from the standpoint of Fleury carried them the first two rounds, and Murray took them home the last two rounds to win the cup. But if you go back and look at the tape of game 7 in round 2 against the Capitals, if it wasn't for Marc-Andre Fleury, I mean, he was the reason they won Game 7. Washington was clearly the better team, and the performance he put on in that game in that first period where he faced, like, close to probably 20 shots was ridiculous. So he's a tough customer. Getting the puck by him for sure. And the Vegas is playing very well in front of him as well, so that's always a good combination.
Yeah, I have to second that. I think that this is something that I've been a big proponent of too when it comes to Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, there was a stretch there where Marc-Andre Fleury definitely costed the Penguins some playoff series, but he was no passenger on that Stanley Cup team. Really, on either of them, when he had the last 2 years where the Penguins have won the Cup, when Marc-Andre Fleury was called upon, he was good. I completely agree with what Chris said. If it's not for Marc-Andre Fleury, the Pittsburgh Penguins aren't playing for the cup, because Matt Murray wasn't able to come in until basically the start of the third round. And without Marc-Andre Fleury, they don't get to the third round.
I know one of our previous guests here, Matt Salmon of the Tampa Bay Lightning, he liked to remind everyone about Marc-Andre Fleury's low save percentage. Doesn't particularly like the Penguins. I'm sure, Ian, you remember that one.
I do remember Jerk, that.
Jerk, did you have any take on this?
Yeah, I think the case of Marc-Andre Fleury is very interesting. I mean, you know, as you alluded to, Ian, he's definitely been the reason why the Penguins have lost some playoff games, especially you go back to, there's probably, I would say, a 5-6 year period after they won that cup in 2009 where you never really knew who you were going to get. And then, you know, as Chris alluded to, Marc-Andre Fleury has been just lights out all year. And even with the issues that he's dealt with concussion wise, he's been able to battle back and play, you know, like a Vezina caliber goalie, despite not being nominated for it. And, you know, I, as a Sharks fan, I am a little concerned about the second round, considering, you know, it was a 9.71 save percentage in the first round, which of course is going to come down, but it's still ridiculous considering how well he's played all year. And I'd be curious to see if, you know, see which Marc-Andre Fleury is going to come to play. Is it going to be, you know, the Marc-Andre Fleury of 5 years ago where it seems like, you know, he can't stop a puck, or is it going to be the Marc-Andre Fleury we've seen this year where he just takes over games by himself and you just have nothing to show for it?
So before we jump into what happened in the first round, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Eric Halla, if only for AJ. If we didn't mention him, he would probably have an issue. So going on to the first round there, so two sweeps, but honestly, they were probably looked as different as two sweeps could ever look, because the Sharks basically blew out the Ducks, or the Ducks kind of gave it away all series long until the last game. And then on the other end, the Kings fought and scrapped and clawed, and Quick was fantastic, and it was all one goal games. I mean, have you seen a sweep that looked that close before? Start with you, Chris.
Thanks to this, the games were all very close. I was games 1-0 and then 1-3. LA was then going to the third period at home and lost that game. However, Jonathan Quick did everything possible and more. And if you look at, you know, all the different metrics that the young kids like to look at now, you will see that Vegas really, with their, they just couldn't handle their team speed in terms of, you know, opportunity, shots on goal, time of possession, all that good stuff. They really, you know, dominated that series, but it was Jonathan Quick who just refused to lose kind of situation. And I remember the double overtime game. If you go and look at the summary highlights that the NHL puts up, you know, those kind of eight or 9 minute game recaps, you'll see that during that double overtime game, I think they probably show like 10 or 12 of the best highlights or the best scoring chances. They literally were all the Vegas Golden Knights, as an example. So there wasn't one King highlight where they almost scored. So, but, you know, and what I like about that series is, from a Vegas standpoint, was they had, you know, a couple of games where they had a protected lead. You know, one goal lead in the third period, mission accomplished. They were able to dig deep and win a very hard fought overtime game, double overtime game. And then they had another game where they were down a couple of goals going to the third period and were able to rally back. So they had kind of a potpourri of different kind of high quality wins. So I was impressed with them. And for, you know, just to put it out there, I actually thought that LA was going to beat them. I had LA in six in that series and took quite a bit of heat on our Vegas Hockey Podcast show. Although my co-host is his number one team. He grew up in LA, is the LA Kings, but I still took some heat from that. And I think that's like the only series I think I got rolling up to this point. So, so I thought LA was, with Jonathan Quick, was going to win that series, but Vegas was very impressive.
Yeah, I picked Kings in six as well, and I was also wrong on that one. So the barn burner of that series was that 3-2 win with 2-1-0 shutouts, and then of course the double overtime game. Ian, were you expecting that series to look at all like it did?
I thought it was going to be a longer series, but I did have the Knights coming out of it beating the Kings. And the reason for that was just the Kings had, you know, I think their defense is still a little thin. And this Vegas team can come at you in waves. And I just figured that, you know, with Gallant, he could easily really work the matchups. But I expected it to be a longer series. I didn't think it was going to be a sweep. I didn't think the Kings would score only 3 goals. The only thing that really was expected was that Jonathan Quick was one of the better players of the series. And, you know, unfortunately didn't score any goals, though. So I don't know what he's good for.
Yeah, you're right. Quick posted 9.47, and of course, Fleury only topped that with a 9.77.
Right.
And as Chris Ellery alluded to, the underlying numbers were mostly in Vegas's favor. Really, the only game it wasn't was game 4, which, you know, is the game you'd figure the Kings would put up the biggest fight. Jerk, how did your predictions work out on that series?
So I actually had the Vegas Golden Knights winning this series just because I kind of anticipated that they would get at least one win. I did not predict that it was going to be in 4 games, and I think if anybody predicted this series ending in 4 games, they're probably lying, or they're some kind of prophet vision-having kind of person, because it was totally unexpected, and it's
crazy.
Yes, or time traveler. I mean, you can't rule out anything, but it's amazing. You said, you know, Jonathan Quick with such an amazing save percentage and really amazing how well he played, and he was on the losing end of it. And I think that shows just how, you know, how tough and how, you know, even though they play a speedy game, how much this Golden Knights team grinds it out. I mean, especially that double overtime game where, like Chris said, a lot of the highlights were Golden Knights scoring chances. I mean, it seems like they on a regular basis are just throwing everything at the teams they're playing. And, you know, I'm definitely a believer of if you do something enough times, you're going to find success. And we saw that especially, you know, in the regular season, them fighting adversity, but also in the first round where every time it seemed like the LA Kings had some kind of opening or advantage to get themselves ahead of everything, Vegas basically took control back with relative ease.
So moving over to the Sharks, where I said it was a very different looking series, my assessment was while the Sharks beat them pretty handily in several of those games, I think a lot of it was the Ducks dug themselves a hole in games 1, 2, and especially 3. And really the best thing the Sharks did in that series was they didn't take the bait. They didn't sink to the Ducks level. They just, you know, kept on coming, and they didn't do anything stupid in return. Game 4 obviously was a tough fought one to close that out. What impressions did you get when you were seeing that series, Chris?
I just felt like Anaheim was going to have a tough time scoring that. The special teams would have to come through for them to get through that series. I fell in line from a recent guest we had, Felix Sicard, who does great work with the Anaheim Ducks. He said that he felt the Ducks would be a tough out. He thought we had him on a couple of weeks before the end of the season. He thought they would make the playoffs at that point, which he was right. And he thought there'd be a tough out. And that's kind of how I saw this series. Obviously, it was a short series. It was only won 4 games. But I just like the Sharks a little bit better. And then in a couple areas, more than a little, going to the series. So I was pretty confident in San Jose winning that series. I thought they would win it in 6 or so, especially being division rival. But yeah, I mean, Anaheim's going to have to, not to get off topic, but they're going to have to find some scoring. They have a lot of good young defense, and you know, Gibson is still young, and he's a good goalie. Question is, can he take the next step? But they're going to have to find a way to get more scoring with Raquel and have the Perry, Gatzloff, Kessler group go from primary players to secondary players.
Yeah, I think if the Ducks of Game 4 had shown up all series long, it probably would have been a 6 or 7 game series, and it might, you know, would have been a lot closer. But yeah, I mean, they just did a lot of stupid things, especially late in games 1 and 2, and then in game 3, a complete meltdown. Ian, I don't think I saw what your prediction on that series was, but how did that go relative to what you thought it would be?
The Shark series, I had the Sharks in 6. Honestly, the thing with me that stands out the most, like looking back on that series, is that the Sharks really didn't have to play hockey until, you know, parts of game 3 and most of game 4. other than that, they just had to survive, really. And I think, you know, and that was the Ducks' undoing. Their lack of discipline was their undoing. I still think that the Sharks had, you know, even if they brought in a more disciplined game, I think the Sharks still would have made decent enough work of them. But the fact is, like, I think the, you know, without going forward too far, I wonder how, you know, how the Sharks are going to deal with actually having to play hockey again.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it made me think a little bit of the Kings series years ago, the one we shall not speak of, at least not too much, where right. The Sharks didn't have to do much for games one and two, and then getting back into hockey mode, well, it didn't go so well. That
right.
ended very sadly. They were able to stay in it enough to win game four and close out that series, and I'm definitely curious to see what will happen with Vegas. Before we move on to that series, Jerk, how did reality match up to your predictions?
So I had the Sharks winning in seven. There was no doubt in my mind that the Sharks could beat the Ducks. I mean, they had a much stronger offensive attack, lines one through four. They were better in terms of their speed, and I think their decor top four, I would say, matches about the same. But I think the Sharks had the edge on the third pair with the Dilly Dilly pair. But I was not expecting game four. I mean, to the series to go four games. Excuse me, because you know it was expected that the Ducks were going to get irritated at some point, and like you said, try and bait the Sharks into, you know, shenanigans. But you know, I thought the Ducks would at least get a couple wins out of the series just because they do have a lot of skill. And so, you know, the fact that they got themselves into too much trouble to the point where they were swept out, I mean, it definitely came as a surprise to me, just for that fact that I thought they would get a couple games. But, you know, it's been long said, especially with the Anaheim Ducks, like if you can get them, you know, irritated, you're not going to have too much of a hard time trying to win a game against them. And that was on display for a majority of the series.
Yeah, get them irritated and don't get irritated back. And that was one thing that did impress me with the Sharks, was that they didn't take the bait right back, especially with how many young guys they have in the lineup. They kept their eye on the ball, and they didn't get into any funny business on the ice there and let the Ducks just kind of writhe in their own frustration. All right, so moving on to the main event here. So just to set this all up, the regular season series, four games, Vegas won 3 of 4, one OT win for each club. Three of the four were one goal games, with Vegas taking the February game in San Jose 5-3 with an empty netter. So really we're talking about 4 1 goal games. The big players from the Sharks end, Burns had 5 points in there. Pavelski had 5 points. Carlson with 6 points, and Marchessault also with 6 points in those matchups. We'll deep dive in a moment, but given just the matchups you saw between these two teams, what is your initial impression of how these teams are going to face off? We'll start with you, Chris.
So this series is ridiculously even, Steven, as it gets. You know, I would kind of throw out, in my opinion, the regular season matchups. First off, two of the games went to overtime, so then you have the whole 3-on-3 situation. Plus, Brent Burns in the playoffs is going to play 30 minutes a night as opposed to 20 minutes a night during the regular season. But if you really break down this series, you have two, both teams have top flight goaltenders. Both teams are both deep on the forward and defensive units. You know, I like San Jose's group a bit better on the blue line, but I like Vegas's group a bit better up front and forward. But then, you know, the specialty teams both have really good power play units. I think I'm not even going to look at the ranking numbers because it doesn't tell the whole story how close they were. Vegas in the regular season finished at 21.4%, whereas San Jose was 20.6. So both very good units. San Jose excelled on the PK with the second best, and Vegas was solid, a couple percentage points behind. Where 3.5 percentage points behind San Jose. So, you know, when you really break it down, this series, plus, like I said, division rival, granted first year and all, but it doesn't get any closer, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. And it's funny, like I said before, it's like you're reading off the notes that are in front of me here. Ian, what's your quick take on this series?
I think that it's going to be a close series. I agree. I think that the defense, I feel like the defense, like everything just feels like it's kind of a wash. Like, I don't know where the clear advantages are for either team. The Sharks have done really good getting some secondary scoring, but Vegas is a team that's made up of secondary scoring. So it's just like, it's such a hard thing to call. I think in my bracket, I have Vegas coming out of this series as the victor, but I don't think that the Sharks are, you know, I worry for the Sharks. I'm nervous for the Sharks in this series a little bit. Like, I don't feel as confident as I did, obviously, in the Anaheim series, but I don't think the Sharks winning this series is outside of the realm of possibility. But I also, you know, but it, my gut kind of says that this is probably Vegas's series to win.
I would agree that they're definitely the favorite, at least by just a scotch. Hockey Jerk, what's your take?
Well, I too have Vegas coming out in this series, just based on how well they've played in the regular season and in the first round. But, you know, I got to agree with Ian here. I can't really tell who the clear-cut winner is. I mean, they both have had, you know, goaltenders and defensive groups that have both really, really stepped up this year. I think the one key difference between these two teams, and it takes a little bit of digging to spot the difference, but you look at San Jose and, you know, they're more physically intimidating and they have, you know, more of the star, quote unquote, star talent with guys like Logan Couture and Evander Kane and Joe Pavelski versus the Golden Knights. They probably aren't as physically intimidating, save for, you know, their fourth line with Carpenter, Nosek, and Carrier. But, you know, they're more of a quick move your feet, speedy kind of team. And it's a lot of, like you said, Ian, a lot of secondary scoring. But as we know, with good secondary scoring, they can come out of nowhere. And I think we've seen that, right? especially all year. So, you know, if the Sharks want a fighting chance of, you know, winning this series, the big guys need to be the big guys, obviously. And their secondary scoring needs to continue to play at the pace that it has been the previous four playoff games. But also, like I said earlier, they need to limit the amount of chances that they allow the Golden Knights to have, because, you know, like we said, the Golden Knights can be, you know, defending in their own zone and then up on an odd man rush within the blink of an eye. So the Sharks will really need to tighten things up if they want to keep the score low and keep things in their favor.
Right. I know we discussed this last night on Tilton and Glasses too. And I think the challenge for Peter DeBoer is going to be what line is Vlasic going to face? Because I think there's a couple of really dangerous lines there for the Golden Knights. So it's going to be interesting to see how Peter DeBoer matches up Vlasic for that.
And it's like you're reading my notes as well, Ian, because that is actually the very next topic here. So I picked about three things I think are the keys to the series, or what, you know, the Toyota keys to the game, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I picked out three things: Vlasic and Braun, their matchup, goaltending, and special teams. We'll start with Vlasic and Braun because it's like you're reading my notes here. my assumption is they'll probably see a heavy dose of Carlson. I've been looking at the shift charts from the four matchups during the season, and they were out there, you know, they were his shadow all season long. So I expect that's the same thing, and I think that's going to be one of the main matchups. As far as strategy goes for deployment, I'm not really familiar with how does Vegas try to work their matchups. I'll let you kind of chime in on that one, Chris.
Yeah, I think the advantage of having a team with depth, and you're not, if they're going to, how much Gerard Gallant's going to go, try to go out of his way on, you know, on then as like, that's David Perron. The only more, whereas also the young rely to do well. That's, you know, obviously their defensive unit of Miller, Schmidt, and Theodore are going to get the bigger minutes. Although Brandon McNabb had a huge moment in game four against his old mates, against the Kings. But yeah, so I mean, at the end of the day, for me, this series, and I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself by saying this or jumping the gun here, but this series is really going to come down to, for me, one is, how does each group on the specialty teams, I mean, for instance, the reason that Columbus, the biggest reason Columbus is going home as they gave up 8 power play goals in 6 games to the Washington Capitals. So how does each team fare in terms of specialty teams? And to me, the Sharks, success of the Sharks has always in recent times been about their secondary scoring. I think I could go back and track when they started getting more secondary scoring is when they turned this regular season around and have been since that point one of the better, you know, have one of the top records in the league. And if you told me now how those two factors would play out, I feel like I would be able to make a very good prediction. But to me, that's what it's going to come down to for the Sharks is how in a 7-game series, how did the Bodickers, how did the Timo Meyers, the LeBlancs, the Sorensens, the Tierneys, the Donskys, how do those guys do? And again, no one's asking them to carry the mail. We're talking about doing their thing and chipping in secondary goals. So, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to probably have a lot of 3-2 games in the series.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment there. Ian, what's your take? I assume that you'll probably be repeating a lot of what you said on teal tinted glasses, but go for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because, like, going back to the Vlasic pairing there, I think it's interesting on both sides because, like, Peter DeBoer has some pretty set lines, and so does Gerard Gallant. But I feel like Gerard Gallant, like, with a little bit of mixing can make things very difficult for Peter DeBoer if you know, should Vegas maybe run trouble early. I think that you can dole out at some different combinations for the Golden Knights and really make difficult decisions on where you send Vlasic, right? Because I think, as well as obviously William Karlsson, you know, is going to draw a lot of Vlasic time, but there's other players on that team, like, you know, James Neal, Jonathan Marchessault, that, you know, that could also require Vlasic's attention should the lines get jumbled up for the Golden Knights a little bit there. I think that as far as, like, for the Sharks go, though, I mean, the third line's going to have to do some stuff. I think that the Sharks have gotten a lot of contributions from their first, second, and fourth line. They haven't gotten enough from their third line. They're going to need that against a team like the Golden Knights, because the Golden Knights can hit you on lines 1-4. And if the Sharks can't match that, I think that's part of the problem that's part of the way that they can end up in trouble this series.
Mr. Jerk, Vlasic and Braun v. Karlsson, do you think that's what's going to happen? Or do you think Peter DeBoer will go the different strategy?
I think it is going to happen just because, you know, it's a fair assumption that Karlsson is going to be seeing a majority of the time in the game, you know, whether it's power play, penalty kill, or 5-5. And so they're going to need Vlasic Braun to really be a sharp and be on their game. But as like Ian said, if it's not Karlsson, I mean, you have Marchessault, you have Perron, you have Halla and Tuck and Tomas Tatar and, you know, Riley Smith and all of these guys who are going to be a very potent attack for the Golden Knights. And so it's going to be, you know, 1-6 for the Sharks. They're going to need to be locked in. And I know we like to talk about, you know, the adventures of Brent Burns and Paul Martin, and they especially, you know, they were good against the Ducks, but they're going to need to be even better against the Golden Knights, because if we start to see some more of those wild adventures, then the Golden Knights are going to be cutting the Sharks to ribbons with relative ease.
All right, so we have a couple minutes we have to wrap up here. So, Chris, I know as a Islanders guy, I'm sure you have takes, feelings, thoughts on the Tavares situation.
Here's the thing. I think Tavares really likes, first of all, if this is his team, he really likes living on Long Island. Long Island's a pretty nice place to live, especially when you're doing well financially, which has not been a problem for him, or nor will it be on his next contract. And, you know, the Islanders are a little bit of a different animal from a standpoint. It's not like playing in Toronto or Montreal for the Rangers. You know, people are very hyped up about the team and all that, but they really, you could just live your life and be, I don't want to say an anonymity, but so there's a lot of pros. I know he's very high on his teammates. Obviously, Matthew Barzal, I don't think I'm going out on a limb by saying he looks like he's going to be a superstar. This team is Again, taking off my blue and orange sunglasses, as Russ Cohen likes to say, is not as far away as it would probably seem from afar. Obviously need to get the goaltending play much better in the team defense. But there were a lot of good things that especially that came together during the struggle of the season. Ryan Pulock really emerged in the second half of the season, and so did Anthony Beauvais. They have plenty of scoring with guys like Jordan Eberle and Andres Lee, who's probably one of the quietest, goal scoring stars in the league that no one talks about. So, and they have a lot of assets. They have two tickets for this Saturday night's lottery. This is like the Game 7 Stanley Cup Final for Islander fans this Saturday night, the lottery, and they have two tickets, hopefully to paradise with as Long Island Eddie Money once sang, with thanks to the Travis Hamonic trade last June. So, who knows how things will play out with that. And they have a number of other guys knocking on the door, like young American Kiefer Bellows, who was a star at last year's World Juniors. So there's a lot of good things coming with them. But having said all that, he still is inside. I think this is where he wants it to work out. Obviously, the building situation is finally worked out. Now they're just going to get shovels in the ground, which should be happening sometime in the near future. So, I think, unfortunately, for Islander fans, they're going to have to really sweat this out literally to the last minute, like a la Steven Stamkos. But at the end of the day, if I was a betting man, I would say it's 2-1 that he'll wind up staying with the Islanders. I think it would have to be a situation where it's another team where he feels like he could win right away and, the contract and works out well. And also, too, like that, for lack of a better term, that quality of life situation, being shadowed everywhere or having, to use an exaggeration, 400 people, if he went back home to the Maple Leafs because he's a Toronto kid, after practice. I don't know if that's what he really wants. Maybe it is. I mean, maybe I'm crazy, but if I was a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, I would want Drew Doughty. I would want Victor Hedman. Like, if I was going to – I mean, I get it that Tavares is from Toronto, but if Tavares wasn't from Toronto and he was from Calgary, would they be, jonesing for him as much as they are because he's a Toronto kid? Last time I checked, I think they're pretty good on scoring. They need to shore up that blue line if they want to go from a really good team to Stanley Cup contender, but be that as it may. So, like I said, I'm going to say, 2-1, 66%. He re-signs with the Islanders. It's been a painful situation for Islander fans to have to go through this. Think at the end of the day, it will work out.
And with that, what is your final call? What is your prediction for Sharks and Vegas?
Well, here's the thing. Like, since the NHL trade deadline, I felt like if the Sharks could land a scoring forward, which turned out to be Evander Kane, and the way they were playing, and I couldn't imagine Evander Kane fitting in any better. They were kind of my sleeper team in the West. Like, the team, they were like one of the only teams I could think of that I thought would be able to beat in Nashville, given their goaltending, given their defense, given their experience. So I really want to, from a hockey insider, air quotes, perspective, want to pick the Sharks. But from a standpoint of, the sports soothsayer in me is saying, the old expression, beware of the Ides of March, beware of the magic carpet ride. And that's what Vegas has been on all year. So even though that's intangible, or that's really not, for lack of a better term, logical, it's been happening like all year. Like, it's defied logic. I mean, the fact that they've been able to go through an 82-game schedule with hardly a bump in the road, even when they were going through a different goalie every night at some point, or even when Fleury had a concussion or whatever it may be, and then they play, the Kings and they wind up sweeping them. So I'm not saying that because of that, the Knights are going to win the Stanley Cup, but it makes me kind of fearful if I was a Sharks fan from that standpoint. So I'm going to say Vegas in 7 in overtime, in Game 7. But like I said, this is a flip of the coin series. I mean, it can go either way. I mean, I know I'm like kind of like, well, that's great insight, but it really is that close. Obviously, a key injury to either side could really change things dramatically, but that's how I see it playing out.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate you joining us. I know you have to run. Hopefully we can do this sometime again.
Sounds good. Yes. Be my pleasure. And next time you have Zach Devine on, make sure you tell him I told him about Charlie McAvoy.
I will do so.
Yeah, we will make sure to rub it in with him. Appreciate it. Thanks, Chris.
You got it. Have a great night, guys.
And with that, so we'll go Ian Reed. What are your final thoughts and prediction on this series?
You know, it's hard because I think my theme on TTG last night was that really neither of these teams have been punched in the jaw yet. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, they've really faced no adversity so far in the playoffs. And it's going to be interesting to see how either team reacts to it. But, you know, as he brings up, you know, as Chris brought up, you know, Vegas has kind of been punched in the jaw a few times during the course of the season. You know, they played their fourth string goalie at one point. So they've definitely seen some adversity, although playoffs is a completely different animal. I have to stick with my brackets. So I'm going to go Vegas in six, but I think the X factor is, you know, how do they react if when something doesn't go their way, because everything has pretty much gone their way this season. So if the series, you know, something in the series doesn't go their way, how do they respond to that? And I think that's going to be the most interesting part of the series to me.
Sir Jerk, how are you feeling about this series?
I'm feeling a lot of things about this series. I'm the more that I break it down and kind of really think about it piece by piece, the better I'm feeling about the Sharks' chances. But at the same time, I still think, you know, with the ebbs and flows that are going to come out of this series, and, you know, Vegas is probably going to be up, Sharks will probably be up. I think it's going to be back and forth. But ultimately, I think the Golden Knights are going to take it in seven.
Wow, we are the world's best Sharks fans here.
We are the worst Sharks fans ever. Why did you pick us?
So to go over everything, I mean, I've been digging stats because you all know I love my stats. I love to look at everything. And I can't help but think that Vegas does have an advantage between just all the matchups the Sharks had with them this season. But like Jerk said, the Sharks definitely have a shot. But at the same time, I could see this going as quickly as five. I could see this going to seven very easily. I think it's going to come down a lot to puck bounces and, unfortunately, to how much the refs call. I think the more the referees call, I think the better it will work in the Sharks' favor, because I think they do have a special teams advantage. Not a huge one, but they are slightly better in that department overall. So I'm going to say Knights in seven. To make this a clean sweep for Vegas.
Oh, wow.
This is a Sharks podcast, people. I'm sorry. I'm sure the upcoming preview edition of After Dark will hopefully have some people picking the Sharks. We are the worst Sharks fans. So with that, I should wrap up here because
Trader sure Town USA.
Everyone will hate us now after they listen to this. All right. So at the top of the show, Chris plugged everything he did. I will put those links in the description. Yeah. He works on several different podcasts. He writes and does a lot of different things and wants us to remind Zach Devine that he was right. Check out those links. I'll even put in the description, hey, Zach, he was right. So yes, if you're new here, please hit that subscribe button. Give us a like, whether it's on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, the whole nine yards. You can check out all our content on Teal Town USA. You can find me at Chris JWS on Twitter. Ian Jerk, what are each of your handles, Jerk?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at @hockey_jerk. And if you like hearing me ramble incoherently, you can listen to me on the Pucknologist podcast, which is also part of the Teal Town USA family. And you can also find me over at the Teal Tinted Glasses podcast, which talks a little bit more about the rest of the NHL, but there is some Shark stuff there too. So like I said, if you really like hearing me ramble on for, you know, 60 to 120 minutes, that's your place to be.
I could listen to you all night, sir. Ian Reed.
I am at Ian Blogs Hockey on the Twitter machine. You can also find, I occasionally with time, write articles on Teal Town USA. You can find me on Teal Town USA After Dark. And you can also, again, with Jerk, find me, Mr. Hockey Jerk, and Kevin Lacey on the Teal Tinted Glasses podcast, which is tealtintedglasses.com.
You now have all our contact information. You can yell at us on Twitter for our terrible predictions. Thank you all for listening and have a good night.